This is Roots and Shoots.
Text on 0437 922 720 or call 1300 222 720.
You can always do all those things, can't you, Sabrina?
Bling, ding, ding. I was doing a little jig there too.
That's a bit of rhythm. It gets you going.
That does, because I haven't been up since 4 o'clock in the morning. So
I was dancing earlier. I was playing a few sing-along tunes. Do like my music.
Yeah, so, I know you've been playing some cracking tunes this morning.
Are you going to Fairbridge?
No, because I'll be in Paris.
Oh, well, la-dee-da. From Fairbridge to Paris, how very nice for you. Are there some gardens you're hanging out in over there?
No, hopefully some bars rather than gardens. Now, I'm meeting my daughter who's in Europe, so I'm going to go to Paris. We'll spend a week in Paris.
Then living there?
No. She's just on a European jaunt.
Lovely. Yeah.
So I'm going to meet up with her when she's going to go from Vienna to Paris, and then we'll go to Madrid, and then we're going to Morocco.
Wow. Oh, you told me about this before, because I would love
to
do that.
We're doing a tour of some of the most amazing private gardens in Morocco.
You lucky, lucky woman.
I know. It's not a bad gig.
I was listening to Richard Feidler. We always go off on a bit of a tangent at the start of the show, but we'll get to the calls, Ferry. We do like to catch up, myself and Sabrina, about things. I was listening to Richard Feidler this week, and I wish, now that I've brought it up, I wish I could name the chap he was talking to. It was later on in the week. But this guy has put a proposal to the Australian government to fund... He's involved in some amazing gardens in Cornwall.
Oh, wow.
The hidden gardens of...
Oh, yes.
What's it called? The hidden gardens of... And he literally dug into it. He just basically slashed and burned and found this amazing garden.
Yeah.
And then he spoke about it. He said, you know, this is what I'm proposing to the Australian government, of doing an Antarctic garden in Hobart.
Well, I reckon
Do you know
could.
Much about this?
I've been in Hobart in winter.
You did summer alone, actually.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
I just love those big ideas like that, like... Let's just go for broke and
it's doable. It is doable.
Yeah.
I think I should be involved in it.
Yeah, well, I was thinking there's an idea for you. From Morocco to Hobart and establish this worldwide garden. That is really me going on a tangent, but I thought you might know something
about it. But you know, in terms of tourism, because we are now finally recognising the importance of nature. So we're finally recognising, even in Perth, the value of old trees. We're finally recognising that we have to have green space and nature around us. Otherwise, we're such
miserable creatures,
miserable organisms. So what will happen is places where you've got pristine nature, and don't forget that something that's created, like the Antarctic garden in Hobart.
That may be created,
should be created. It will naturally evolve. So they will become huge, huge tourist hotspots because we are learning that once we are devoid of nature, then something happens to us psychologically, physically, all those sorts of things.
Hmm.
So I'm going to push for it.
I think with you behind them, it could happen.
Mm.
I really do.
I'm good at nagging.
You are. You got that voice, Sabrina. God, you would have been some mother. Imagine you nagging you into, you know, making sure you have your water bottle and your sun hat.
That's exactly it. Go and do your homework. That kind of thing.
Can't see you've been big on that. But maybe the sunscreen and the hat. I could see you've been big on that.
Definitely the sunscreen and the hat. And also having to do chores out in the garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You will move that big pile of cow poo.
And I had my son with his wheelbarrow. It was our bring out the dead time.
Oh,
is that what you
exciting.
Call it?
Yeah.
Bring out the dead.
Yeah.
And last weekend, come on, mate, fill up those wheelbarrows.
And
off
take
you go.
Out. Did he then go up and down the street like my kids used to and bring
Oh, just
like,
shopping?
Two wheelbarrows.
What do you call shopping? Can I go shopping? And he's kind of one of those inventive little kids who likes to
awesome.
Put stuff together.
Yeah. Fantastic. So you get twice as much crap.
Shall we go to some calls?
Oh, I think we should.
Marie's called in from South Perth. Hello, Marie.
Oh, good morning. I've just asked a question. I have a Nancy Lou Fuchsia in a pot. I've had it for about 4 months. It has developed this extensive white patch issues on the leaves, and the local garden centre diagnosed a mite. I've been using this Echo oil at intervals over the last 3 months.
Yeah.
But it still has quite extensive patches.
Yeah.
However, this morning, just before I rang in, I had a look at the undersurface of the leaves, and there is more white creatures.
Yeah, it's thrip.
I'm not sure. Some of the leaves are coming up now. I haven't had it in the shade quite so much over the last few weeks because the weather's been cooler.
Yeah.
They have grown they're quite healthy looking.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure if I should continue with his oil because I've just seen quite a few little mites on the surface of the leaves.
Yeah. Well, mites really, I wouldn't use oil for mites anyway. I don't know why they've told you that. But I reckon it's thrip because, Marie, I've got thrip on the back leaves of my fuchsia. So I got the little magnifying glass out and had a look. So you're better off just using pyrethrum.
Oh, pyrethrum. I could use that.
Yeah, and get it on the backs of the leaves.
Get it on the back.
Yeah.
Okay, and as a spray.
Yes, as a spray.
Yes. I have also been sort of fertilising it with an Echo fertiliser.
Yeah, that's fine. Spice. Yeah, that's fine, Marie. That's
but I'm not sure how often.
Well, now at this time of the year, you should only be doing it once every 4 weeks.
With the
fertiliser.
Fertilizer.
Yeah, yeah. They'll start to slow down fairly soon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Marie.
A bit like ourselves on a cold morning.
Absolutely. Fuchsia likes some cold weather, though, doesn't it?
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
Now, Tim Schmidt.
Tim
Schmidt is the guy who does these gardens.
Ah!
People have obviously been listening.
Yes, the Eden Project.
The Eden Project, it's called. And apparently there's one being built in China.
Yes.
And the Heligan Gardens.
Yeah.
The hidden Heligan gardens in Cornwall, which were the ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth it. As a person who likes gardens, it's actually worth re-listening to that interview.
Absolutely. You can podcast it.
Podcast it.
Yeah.
It definitely struck my fancy anyway. Mark has called in for Bedfordale. Hello, Mark.
Oh, good day, Sabrina.
Hello, Mark.
I've been told by the council I have to plant two Corymbia calophylla trees, which I understand to be Mary trees.
Yeah.
And says not less than 20 centimetres in pot size in my front yard.
Yeah.
Now, how big would that be in real terms and how do I plant them?
Okay, great question. Now, we've got a special guest coming in who's going to talk about, have you got, is it going to be on Retic?
No.
Good. Okay, so a 20 centimetre pot with the plant in the pot, you're probably looking at it about 1.2, 1.5 high.
Right.
Now, I know it's a native plant, but don't just dig a hole in sandy soil or Bedfordale's actually got quite good soil, I think.
Yeah, it's the soil's very red and rocky. There's no sand anywhere.
Okay. So drainage might be the thing that you need. Does the water drain away or is it sort of heavy clay?
I'm not sure. It's very red. I haven't seen water pooling anywhere. No, it drains fairly well, I think.
Okay, cool. All right. So go and get yourself a bag of compost.
Yep.
And some slow-release fertiliser.
Yep.
For native plants. Dig a hole, mix a bit of the compost and the slow-release fertiliser in the hole, pop in a bit of wetting agent, fill the hole up with water, and then put the tree in and then do the infill, two-thirds the soil, one-third compost.
Okay, how big does the hole have to be?
Twice the size of the pot, depending upon if you can dig a hole that big unless you hit rock.
Okay.
But you need it twice the depth and twice the width of the pot.
All right, so compost, slow-release fertiliser, and what was the third thing?
Wetting agent.
All right, yep.
And then mulch on top of it, like a coarse, thick, you know, like a pine bark mulch.
Yep.
And off you go.
Excellent.
That's today's chore. Done, Mark.
You're all a busy man, Mark, today.
And where do you buy them from?
What, the trees?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you can get them from any native nursery, Mark. We'll definitely have that tree.
Are there any down south? Because most of them seem up around Nangara, Wanneroo Way?
Yes. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they grow down south.
All right.
You mean to buy or to...
Yeah.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yep.
Right.
Most of the nurseries down south will have it.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks. Joan has a question about her lawn, and she's in Bassendean. Hello, Joan.
Good morning. Actually, it's not my lawn. My lawn looks like a sandpit, but I'm not worried.
Fair enough.
Well, I have several fruit trees in it, and my chooks like to dust bath, so it's a losing battle.
Yeah, my neighbour's chooks, they like to dust bath in my garden as well.
No, Bella, turn that down, darling. sorry, it's my granddaughter turning the radio on. She wants to hear as well.
Yeah, of course she does.
Sweet.
This is a very good show.
I'm ringing on behalf of friends who are living in Haynes on a new estate who have a soft leaf buffalo, they tell me, in a lawn. Now, twice, last year and this year, after a hot spell, patches of the lawn have died, almost up to a metre.
Yeah.
So they've got the fellow back who actually laid the lawn, and he has aerated it. He's provided Sea-Sol on it. He's put NPK on it.
Yep.
And nothing's happening.
Right.
So I said I'd ring Sabrina and see what she says.
All righty. So now, when the lawn was laid, did it go in with some loam or some, good stuff?
Well, this is the question.
Yeah. And, so Haynes is down near Kwinana, isn't it?
No, the back of Armidale.
Oh, okay, so it's heavier soil.
Although
there's some areas. Okay.
There is sand as well.
People think that lawn is tough, and it is tough, but they don't do any prep. And if you don't do the prep in the first place, you're going to get problems later on down the track. So what you need to do is go and get some good quality compost.
Yep.
You put that on the lawn as a dressing.
Okay.
Now, it could be fungal, it could be dry spot, where the water is just not penetrating in patches.
Yes.
So you need to go and get a compost. You need a good quality wetting agent.
Yep.
There's one that looks like coir peat in a bag.
All right.
So spread that all over the place.
Yeah.
Then go and get the fertilizer that's got microscopic fungi and bacteria in it.
Or would just microbes, if they could just put microbes on
it. Yes, just soil
that was
microbes.
My suggestion, yeah.
Now, water that in really well.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, so you've only got a window of about a month for that lawn to pick up before winter. They're a hot climate grass, so in winter they'll go off a bit.
Okay, yeah.
But so do all that now.
Continuing problems, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Alison from Kalbarri has called. She's an aloe tree that snapped off in the wind, 12 inches from the top. The stem and roots look healthy, but it's not shooting. Any ideas?
An aloe tree.
An aloe tree, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not aloe vera.
No, it must be a big aloe. Well, I wouldn't worry. If it's an aloe, it'll be fine. It'll just come back. It'll take a little while, that's all.
When's its growing time?
Well, more like you'll have to wait till spring.
Mm.
Spring and summer. She'll fairly go woompa.
In Kalbarri too.
It'd be grand.
She'd be grand. Jeff has called in from Mandra. Good day, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning, ladies. Sort of a question about frangipanis. I've got three cuttings that have been dried out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I just wonder if it's too late to put them in pots because I know they go dormant over the winter.
No, absolutely not, Jeff. You put those in pots today.
Okay, that's fine.
So pot them up with potting mix. Now, I don't know how long the cuttings are, but they may need a stake to keep them stable.
Yeah, they're not too long. They're only about 2 foot. Put a bit more.
Oh, okay. That's fine. They won't need a stake. No, do it today and put them in a nice hot spot.
Yeah, I've got an ideal spot for that, yes.
Perfect, Jeff.
Nice one, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye. Are we, is this the window of time to do stuff like that with plants that are very much summer plants, your frangipanis and your...
Yep. Yeah. So you've got about a month. So All the tropical type plants, they will go by a reduction of daylight hours, but also the temperature at night.
Right.
And that's why we don't put any of our brassicas in the veggie garden, like cabbages, kale, broccoli, broccolini, parsnip. We don't put any of that stuff in the ground until we get cool nights, because they'll just bolt to seed. So we've now got cool nights because I had to put a doona on my bed the other night.
Same here.
Yeah. So that's a good indicator. It's getting cooler at nights, even if you don't go outside. So do that. But I have to say, put your garlic in now because you want your garlic to shoot before winter.
Now, you and your garlic, or me and my garlic. So I followed your advice, put the garlic in. I'm thinking it's about April now. I'm sure she said that's when I can.
Yeah.
I can't find the stuff.
No, it'll come up.
No, but it was sprouting lovely and you said let it die down.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Then what?
Well,
then it died down and now I don't know where it is.
Well, now you have to dig.
Okay.
It shouldn't have died.
So like it,
So if it's died right down to
the ground. So because I was waiting because I pulled it early around February
and it wasn't ready. It wasn't good. Yeah.
So I've put them all over the place.
Yeah.
And then I let them die down and then I was like, now I have no idea where they are.
So well, you need to dig them up.
So it's supposed to be an X marks the spot kind of situation. Yeah, yeah, I should have put like lollipop sticks or something.
Just a little stick in where they were. Okay. But most people pull them while there's still a bit of green on them.
No, see, Sinead forgot that. So I should have done that then.
Should have done that. I hate that new bar that's here.
That is doing my head in.
I know. We should have a petition. For people that don't know, they've got this. I don't know why they've done that.
I found out what it's about now.
Can you?
So as Sabrina said, there is like a neon strip that you would see in a bad toilet in a nightclub.
Yeah.
It literally looks like that.
Yeah.
Right at myself and Sabrina's eye level. Mm. And when she laughs, it goes red because she has a laugh that carries for miles.
I know.
She belts it out. And when it goes blue, it means there's too much quietness in here.
Yeah, that's
but at
right.
first, I had not a clue what that thing was doing. And it's offset by a light in the far end of the studio that is about to die. So you've got light flashing. If one of us have an epileptic fit, it won't be that surprising. So
hideous.
See, there it goes. So every person who's come in is going, what's that light about?
I'm
like, well, you know what? I don't know. But actually, Ken, our lovely master control man, came in and described what it was because it is quite freaky.
It is.
It's to do with levels. That's what it's to do with. I thought it was motion sensitive, so I was like trying to set it off. You see? You laughed.
I know. That should be just a laugh monitor. We need to move it where we can't see it, though. Because
it's because it's at eye level. It's basically for me to go, Sabrina's laughing, can you drop the levels? But the thing is, we enjoy a laugh. Yeah. I'd be here all day. I'd end up with RSI. It would be a disaster.
Moving bloody sliding buttons.
So, yeah, there's an insight into Radioland for everyone.
Right. I don't like it. I'm going to start a petition that they get rid of it.
It's just where it is. It's right on aisle. And it's massively distracting.
It is. And I'd be the only one that sets it off like 500 times an hour.
Music does as well, though.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, so you play certain songs and it's just going, woohoo, yeah.
They'd never have it in Triple J then.
No, it would just be going off.
Mm,
yeah,
constantly.
But it's just like red usually, is
alarm.
And you're like, what's going on? Mm. What's going on? And then this other thing flicking.
Flicking light here.
And then a blue light. I never like a blue light. Blue
it's like being in a disco, really, isn't it, Sinead?
Our life is
without
a disco.
Without the drugs.
Right, and people are like, would you get on with the gardening? Stop talking about that light. Goodness sake.
All right.
Let's do that. We've got Simon, who has a question about his olive trees. Hello, Simon.
Hi, how are you girls?
Very well.
We're fab, Simon.
It's nice to hear you. I got a huge problem. I got an olive tree that is about 8 years.
Yeah.
Old, and every year I trim it sort of, maybe 50% and do everything right. And there's never any olives. So it was about 3 meters. I looked at it the other day. It was about 3 meters. I thought, oh, I'm going to get through the rest. You know, it's so healthy and it's so everything, but it's not getting any olives. And I got me trimmers and everything else, started cutting. Then inside of it, I find half a dozen olives. So tell me what the bloody hell.
Your moment of glory,
I'll tell you
Simon.
Something. I was going to celebrate. I was going to do. But it's only half a dozen. They're beautiful.
It's hardly a jar's worth, is it, Simon?
They trim this. So what are I going to do?
You've trimmed it. So.
I trimmed it already about 50% of it.
Yeah, no, well, that's good, Simon. I think it needs a bloody good pruning to slip it into action. Now, what
it's
happens?
It's almost dead. I was going to kill it.
No, it'll come back. It'll probably come back and give you more fruit than you've ever had. Now, the big problem here with olive trees is we overwater and over-fertilise them. So they just grow. They go, we're not going to give you fruit, but I'll give you plenty of leaves and branches.
Yeah, the problem is I got it on my lawn where I got bore water.
Three times
a week you get.
Right. Well, it's just going to grow and not give you much fruit.
Oh,
Simon.
My God. So
it's in happy land.
Oh.
So if you hacked at it for a bit, would that help?
Well,
the olive situation.
Yeah, hacking at it will cause it stress, so that'll help.
But what can I do? Can I make sure the water doesn't come to it?
Yeah. See if you can change your retic so that the actual olive doesn't get the water, but your lawn still does.
So how much olive needs water? How much?
Well, I'm sure you've seen them in Italy and Spain and, once a fortnight. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're using bore water, that's probably very alkaline, so you're going to have trace element deficiencies. Mm-hmm. And you'll find once you'll have to deal with that. You'll have to get trace elements onto your tree,
mm-hmm.
But don't give it any other fertiliser. Cut the water off and it'll probably fruit like a demon.
Okay, thanks.
Give that a go.
I have to almost dead tree. I tell you.
And you enjoy those four olives.
You need to stir up a nice martini or something to really appreciate those four olives that you have. Cheers, Simon.
Thank you.
You can just see him there with his martini.
with four martinis lined up with his little four. Oh,
it's 8 years. Like, it's one every 2 years.
He could put two olives in the one martini.
Go for broke, I say. Absolutely. An interesting text here. Good morning. This is from Elise. We're living on a cattle station 100 k's north of Port Hedland and are struggling to save our cane palms from the grasshoppers. What can we do to save them from being stripped?
The only thing you can do with grasshoppers, because once they come in large numbers, they're actually plague locusts. And because they move so quickly, there's nothing, the only thing you can do, and I don't know how big, because the cane palms get pretty big up there. The only thing you can do is wait for them to pass and then fertilise them to get new growth, or you have to net them. Now, a woman up in Karratha,
mm-hmm.
they had plague locusts come through and the only bit of green, like they just stripped everything. The only bit of green she was worried about was the lawn, and she went outside and she sprayed it with a water-based spray paint that was bright yellow.
Wow.
So she sprayed all the lawn with this bright yellow paint and
so the grass,
not
the
touched.
Locusts were everywhere.
They decimated her garden. Because she sent me a photo. I'll have to dig it up.
That would have looked amazing.
And they didn't go anywhere near the lawn. So perhaps you could, your golden canes could be really golden.
Or just actually go another way. Spray them bright purple if you're a Dockers fan or blue if you're West Coast or whatever it might be.
It'd be interesting because plague locusts have a set of behaviours once they're in large numbers. But that's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like they decimated every single tree, every plant, left the lawn alone.
And she would have put a lot of work into it in Karratha.
Yeah.
Devastating.
God.
Yeah.
Interesting solution to a problem.
Absolutely. We'll take more of your calls very shortly, 1-300-222-720, or if you've got your phone at hand and you'd prefer to SMS, you're feeling a bit shy, 0437-922-720.
Oi, angry with your side's effort on the weekend?
Yeah, filthy. Tweeted about it to my followers. Those 891 people sure know how I felt.
Mate, I told my 774 Facebook friends how stoked I was about my side's win.
Really? This Saturday, let all of WA know what you think on the original form of social media.
Hello, welcome to
Sports Talk with me, Clint Wilden, Shane Woden and Mark Duffield. Saturdays from 10 a.m. on ABC Perth and ABC WA.
Sports Talk coming up after 10 o'clock. Now, we're joined in the studio by a lovely guest, and Sabrina's going to introduce him.
Well, we've had Hans Lambert in before because he is a very interesting scientist who has done some incredible studies into the plants of the southwest of Western Australia. His knowledge of the evolution of our plants is extraordinary and has published a sensational book. If anyone's interested in the flora of Western Australia, particularly the southwest, and how it's evolved and why it's evolved the way it has, then I haven't. It's called Biodiversity of Plants of the
Plant Life on the Sand Plains of Southwestern Australia.
That's right. So, Plant Life on the Sand Plains of Western Australia. It is such. It is a sensational book. I recommend if you're interested in our flora, you get this book because it will change your whole perspective and appreciation of our flora. So, welcome, Hans.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, Hans. Now, Hans, I believe we have an issue with Jarrah trees.
We do, not in the bush. They are perfectly healthy there. But if you go to the parkland in Kings Park, for example, they really looked, it's better now, but a lot of them still look in very, very bad shape. So we were really interested in what actually causes that. And, what are the symptoms? So people actually know about that. And what are the solutions for it? And in collaboration with Kings Park, we actually did a little study, which we published a few years ago, and we actually demonstrated that it was a lack of manganese in those leaves. Now, why is that? Why would these plants all of a sudden have manganese deficiency when the plants in the bush?
In the bush, yeah. And that's interesting, isn't it?
In the bush, they are perfectly healthy, but in the parkland, that's where they look terrible. Now, the difference is, of course, that they irrigate the parkland because that's where the lawn is. The Jarrah doesn't need irrigation, but the lawn does. So they irrigate that. And where do they get their irrigation water from? Well, they pump it up from limestone caves underneath the Spearwood dunes over there. And so they irrigate with alkaline bore water, and that's the problem. You just mentioned micronutrient deficiency or trace element deficiency. Well, that's actually induced by soils that have a pH that is too high, induced by that alkaline bore water. Then all these trace elements, these micronutrients, they become very poorly available. That's true for iron, that's true for manganese, it's also true for zinc and copper. So what do you do about it? And we demonstrated that in collaboration with Kings Park that it really works. You basically acidify the soil back to the level where it was before you started irrigating. Yeah, before you started applying bore water.
So that's interesting, Hans, because I noticed over the last 10 to 12 years, a lot of the garden consults I've done with people along that coastal strip who have bore water, I've seen a decline in particularly the trees over the last 10 years. So the bore water, which is obviously alkaline, and people don't understand that the water that we put on actually affects the soil, the pH of the soil.
Yeah.
So it's not just in parks and, ovals. And I was talking to a couple of the head gardeners in one of the councils, and they were saying that they put Jarrah trees in, this is around parks and gardens, and after about 8 years the Jarrah just go into severe decline.
Yeah.
So do you think that could be the problem?
Oh, I think that is definitely the problem. And the cure is there too. Acidify the soil. Now, in Kings Park, we demonstrated that if you inject the soil with iron sulfate, those trees that were actually on their way out, they just perk up within weeks. In my own garden, I do that with the Banksias, for example, and within a couple of weeks, a yellowing Banksia really turns bright green again. So all of that's how you do it. Now, what you can also do is acidify the water before you start irrigating it, and that's what they are exploring at Kings Park right now. Whatever you do, restore the pH to the acidic level that it was before, and Bob's your uncle.
So for the home gardener, Hans, or for what I like to call the gorilla gardener, well, you have another term called the Iron Ladies, I believe.
The Iron Ladies, because I've...
The Maggie Thatchers of
Iron... No, this is a different subspecies of Iron Ladies. Very, very different. And these do fantastic things. So people talk to me and said, well, what can I do about it? I said, well, you can write to your council. I've done that. All I get is an auto reply. And so I've got credentials in this particular field, so I know what I'm talking about. So when I explained that to them, I said, well, this is the cause, this is the symptom, and this is the solution. And I never get a reply at all. So then these ladies tell me, well, what can we do about this? I said, well, buy a bag of iron sulfate and sprinkle that.
Oh, you're joking. So they just go out and...
And they go out and they see the tree perk up. Now, you don't want to overdo it, so start... It depends on the size of the tree. If it's a small shrub, a tablespoon is enough. You wash that in and then my Banksias perk up. But if it's a big Jarrah tree, you need a couple of kilos most likely.
Yeah.
And then you wait for a couple of weeks, and if it's not greening up yet, well, you reapply all of that.
So that's fantastic.
Isn't that awesome?
I just love that idea.
The Iron Lady. Yeah. Because many of us live...
green gorilla, yeah.
Many of us live near parklands, and it's quite, you know, it's really pronounced around the city, the decline and the chlorosis of...
Yeah. What does chlorosis mean?
It means the leaves go yellow.
Okay, yeah.
Yellowing
leaves?
Most
of the leaf go it's the youngest leaf that go yellow, because all these trace elements, they are not mobile in the plant. Once they are in the leaf, they can't be exported. So the youngest leaves, they suffer most of all.
So that's for a layperson, that's how they'd know.
Yeah, if you want to become...
It's yellowing, but quite often the veins of the leaf, they are still green, and that's a typical sign of chlorosis. And...
So the condition is chlorosis, or yellowing leaves means chlorosis?
Yes, that's right. So that's what the symptom...
It's not specific to Jarrah. It's just a plant.
No. Often after a really big night, I have a similar problem.
A bit yellow around the gills.
It could be your liver closing down, actually. But so many of us live near parks, and so we see the decline of Jarrah. And if councils are not going to get on board, where it's been, you know, it's been proven actually what the cause is, then there's something that we can all do to actually help save. Because the decline of Jarrah in the urban area, Jarrah and Marri, is frightening.
Yeah.
So go through it again, Hans, in case people have missed it. Because we like to encourage the Iron Ladies or the Green Gorillas.
Or the Iron Men of a different nature. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not all about triathlons and stuff.
I've got an Iron Man doing that too on the golf course on the Netherlands, for example, and he has got wonderful effects there. So really the symptoms are yellowing leaves, young leaves in particular, with the veins sometimes still being green. When you see that, you know it's chlorotic and it needs extra micronutrients, and you shouldn't bother about giving it extra micronutrients or trace elements. You have to acidify the soil. Mm-hmm. And you do that with iron sulfate. So you get yourself a bag of iron sulfate, 25 kilogram, doesn't cost a lot at all, actually, really. And you sprinkle some of that iron sulfate around the base of the stem, spread it under the canopy so it's neatly spread out, wash it in, and that should do the trick.
And if it's in a big parklands and there's no water nearby, like, would you just wait for a day that you know it's going to rain?
I just go there with a bucket.
Oh, that would do it.
And have it dissolved in the water, and then just tip the bucket of water around. And would that do?
That would absolutely do. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, the other thing that you do that you're involved with is a thing called the Quangan Foundation.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Because that is, it's a Facebook page, and it is absolutely amazing. It's just got so much information. So tell us about including
information about the iron chlorosis that we see here. Mm-hmm. And it tells the whole story, much more elaborate than I can actually do here on this interview. It tells the whole story. What does it look like? And I can't show you the leaves over here, but on the Facebook page, you can actually see those leaves.
Yeah.
Explain why we have alkaline bore water, and I explain what the solution for all of that is. And Jarrah is particularly sensitive, so is Mary. Tua doesn't give a hoot about that because they like those limestone caves. But the other trees, a lot of other trees, they don't like that higher pH.
Mm.
And so that is a story I tell there on the page of the Quonkin Foundation. But there are lots of other stories. It tells you how Banksias, for example, function in dirt-poor soils because they've got special roots and they operate in a way that basically means that they run on the smell of an oily rag.
Mm.
And we have actually discovered in the last 10, 20 years how they actually do that. Absolutely fantastic. And that's why these guys that don't live symbiotically with fungi, like eucalypts do, for example, why these plants can actually really grow on dirt-poor soils. So it tells those stories. It tells lots of stories about galls, for example.
Yeah.
And lots of people post beautiful images there.
Amazing photos. There is this beautiful, beautiful video of little baby blue wrens.
Oh, yeah, that was posted last week.
Oh,
yeah.
It is. Everyone, you have to go and look at it. You just fall in love with them.
Well, it was only posted earlier this week, but already 10,000 people looked at that. It's really stunning.
If you've got a pen handy, just let me give you the information for the website. So it's called the Quonkin Foundation. That's Quongan. And you can find it on the UWA website. So plants.uwa.edu.au/alumni/Quonkin. So Quonkin is Quongan. Or you can look up Quonkin in Facebook and you'll pull that up and you'll find all that information.
Mm. And of course, you go into the whole biodiversity of, you know, plant species that are really important for other species that actually live in the woodlands. And I think, Hans, with information like that out there, it gives people the tool to learn more, and hopefully, do you think it will make people respond in a kind of way to the environment once that education's
there? Well, we had an enormous debacle, of course, in the last few months, and people started talking about the importance of the bush, and we have seen that people really do care about our bush. Some people think they didn't, and now we've actually learned since the last election that they do care really a lot about their bush. I mean, those trees are crucially important, not just because they look beautiful, they are important for our wildlife, but they are important for us because they keep our cities a lot cooler.
Mm.
You remove the trees and the whole city heats up by about 5 degrees or so. So we need more trees in our system. We need to look after the trees that we've got, and we've got to plant more. And I think we have to plant the ones that suit our soils and that suit our climate, rather than trying to plant something that is going to die, because it's actually the wrong thing for Perth, for the soils, or for the climate.
It's interesting when you look at the diversity of plants that are available, particularly in a lot of the native nurseries. You know, you've got such an incredible diversity of plants now.
Yeah.
You have to find something that will suit your soil type.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. It's and I just planted my neighbour's garden, verts, for example.
I mean,
she had started a native verts, and that was done professionally with two species.
Oh, yes.
And my native verts probably has 100 species. and not only that, but they all died. So I had a chat with her a few months ago and said, would you like me to redo that? Because if you do, all you need to do is allow me to buy the plants, and I'll do the rest.
Yep.
But you got something like the virtue over there. Well, she had already seen that, and she would love that. So a few weeks ago, I started planting that, and then her daughter called her and said, well, there's a phantom gardener who has been working on our birds.
I like the secret squirrel society that you two know about.
Ah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, these secret gorilla gardeners.
There's a little park down the road from me, and they have planted Jarrah, among other things. But I have, over the years, gorilla gardened that with native plants.
Yeah.
I've period of time. But there are a couple of poorly jarrahs there. So, and it's such a simple solution.
It is such a simple solution. It's an iron sulfate solution.
Yeah, which is readily available cheap.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Well, it used to be cheap. I used to buy that at one of the hardware stores in town, a very common one. And I used to buy it in big bags. I can no longer get it in the bags of 10 kilogram. I can only get it as half a kilogram.
Oh, you have to go to the agricultural supply shops.
But I've got to pay exactly the same for
half a kilo as 10 kilos.
So I told them that was a complete rip-off.
Now you have to change your shopping habits there, Hans, and you go to the agricultural supply places because you can get them in dirty big bags there.
Yeah. Well, that's what we did at UWA. We got them in 25-kilo bags and we've got, I think, 20 of them.
Yep.
And I'll go around with the Friends of the Ground, volunteers, and we look at the trees that actually need the treatment.
Yeah.
Well, the Banksias, they recovered in a couple of weeks, and that was it. The bigger ones, they needed a second treatment, and that was it.
Yep.
The jarrahs, I have to give them a little bit more, but they are perking up, but I've got to be a bit more generous with them because they are really big trees.
Yeah. So
and
anyone
they are older
out there?
Than UWA.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. These old trees are worth preserving
Absolutely.
And saving and keeping healthy.
Yeah.
And if it's so bloody simple, I want everyone to go out that's got a jarrah tree, have a look at the leaves. If it's chloritic, then...
Or yellow. Yeah.
With green veins, go out to the shop. Instead of buying a coffee, get a...
a bag of iron sulfate.
It's almost the same price, really.
Yeah. It's twice the price, but that's
twice
all.
Twice the price.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
Hans, thank you so much.
That was really interesting. The Iron Ladies of Perth, I think that's fascinating.
The Iron Ladies of the Coastal Dunes.
Matty, from Busso says, can people leave some sort of mark if they do the iron sulfate so we don't have 10 people doing the same tree? Would that be a problem for the tree if you had over-treatment?
I think that's a very good suggestion. Just pin up a note and say, I left some iron sulfate. You don't readily overdo it, but if your program is so popular, so I can see that 100 Iron Ladies... And another 50 iron men will actually treat the same jarrah tree, and then you overdo it. So, if you come back after 2 weeks and you're not happy yet, do some more. But but indeed, if you overdose it, that's not a good idea.
No, we need something more cunning than that.
I think you need a picture of Maggie Thatcher. That's what I'm going for.
That you stick on the tree.
Yes.
Now, we need something that's really easy for people to buy. You know what we need to do? We need to have something like a toothpick.
A toothpick?
A toothpick that you stick in the ground near the tree because you buy packets of toothpicks.
Sabrina, a toothpick surely is too small.
Not a toothpick, sorry, a satay stick, I meant, like a kebab stick. So what we do
is... Or a little bamboo steak.
Bamboo steak or a packet of... So what you do is go and buy yourself a packet of those bamboo satay sticks. I want you to put them in the kitchen sink with some green dye.
This would be gas if this takes off.
Yeah, I'm going to start. I hope I hope it goes viral.
Yeah.
I had to put it on my Facebook page and the solution to the problem as well and plus a link to your page. Dye the satay stick in green dye and then just push a green dyed satay stick into the tree that you have just put iron sulfate on so the next person knows that is.
It's the Green Revolution.
It's the Green Revolution. Yeah. Like it.
With the Iron Ladies and men out there in their hundreds. It's fun, Hans.
It is.
I love having you
problem solving on air. It's fantastic.
Hans is a hoot.
We better get back to some of these calls, I feel. Keep you on track.
And I'm
Hans,
off to the Jarrah Forest.
Well, thanks. Oh, lucky you. Thanks for coming in. Nice to meet you, Hans.
Thank you so much, Hans.
Thank you. Let's go to the lines now. Judith has been waiting for some time in Narrogin. Hello, Judith.
Hello, Sabrina and Sinead. I'm enjoying your program.
Oh, thank you.
I live in Narrogin and we have had two black wattle trees shading our afternoon lawn area for 40 years.
Oh.
They've come to the end of their natural and we want to replace them.
Yeah.
We would like asking for suggestions, please, for what we can plant instead. We want them about 8 metres high, yep. 4 metres wide, not deciduous, obviously native.
Yeah, evergreen. Yep, absolutely. Well, you're in Narrogin, and I tell you what, Judith, there are, you know, the red flowering gum?
Yes.
Well, there's grafted forms of the red flowering gum that you can get anything from 4 metres to 12 metres, and there is an 8-metre one. They're grafted. They have that lovely dense canopy on them, so you can get them in various forms of red and also orange.
Right.
And they would be perfect as your shade trees.
Beautiful.
Now get the grafted one, Judith, so that you know that you've got, you will get that flower colour and it will only grow to 8 metres.
Okay. Thank you so much,
Sabrina. Thank you, Judith.
Thanks, bye-bye.
And we've got Keith, there's an opportunity for an open garden. Hello. Oh, sorry, it's Kieran. Apologies.
Oh, that's fine, Sinead. How are you?
Hello, Kieran.
Hello, Sabrina.
Is there an open garden this weekend?
There is an open garden this weekend.
Sensational.
From 10 o'clock to 4:30 on both Saturday and Sunday. And it's a garden you're probably familiar with, Sabrina, Cranny Nook up in Helena Valley.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so Jill's got her garden open. We had it open last year, but that was in November, so now we're in March. So a different look for people who have been there before, and you'll see other things that are coming out in the autumn garden time.
Ooh. So give the address, Kieran.
The address is number 9. Now, it's... Atofi, so it's ATOIFI Gardens, Atofi Gardens in Helena Valley.
Beautiful, and it's a lovely, lovely garden.
And that's 10 to 4 today, is it, Kieran?
And tomorrow.
10 to 4:30 tomorrow. Today and tomorrow.
So oh, okay.
It's a gardener's garden. So
it is indeed.
It's a nice little wander through all the little nooks and crannies, yep. So to speak.
Thanks for calling in with that, Kieran.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks, Kieran.
Yeah. Bye.
So just to repeat that address, it's 9 Atofi Gardens in Helena Valley and it's open 10 to 4:30 today and tomorrow. And it's called the Pennybrook. Mm. The Pennybrook Garden. Mm. You've obviously been there. No? Yep. The Pennybrook Garden is the one.
Yep.
And if you like gardening like Sabrina, it's your kind of garden. Bob is called in from Belden. Hello, Bob.
Good morning, ladies. How are we?
Very well.
Now, Ms. Hahn, I have a question for you.
Yeah, well, that's good because I'm here.
earlier on in your session, you mentioned that to a gentleman that to use pine bark in his garden.
I said like a pine bark mulch, yeah.
Yeah, like a pine bark mulch, yeah. Now, I've got a fully native front yard. I'm just about to replant some plants, which I'm going to get from my favourite nursery up in Wanneroo.
Yes.
And I'm also going to mulch. Now, when you mentioned pine bark or something similar, would something like pine bark actually attract white ants?
Now, it's interesting because termites go for dead and dying stuff, a bit like me on a Sunday morning. They
that bacon? What are you referring to there?
they actually, once something's dead, they're not that interested in it unless there's a big dead mass. So now I know up north people have had incidents of termites underneath their mulch, regardless whether it's pine or anything. So there is you may get them, but it depends on where the termites are in the area that you're in.
Yeah, I have a big park right across the road.
Okay, well, I would say that the termites are way going to prefer to stay in that park than come across to your already dead. Don't forget that it has a different pH to it once it's composted.
Right.
So I think you should be fine, Bob.
Okay, lovely. Thank you for your time.
No worries at all.
Cheers, now, Bob. Thanks.
Now, take some water and Panadol tonight. It will work tomorrow morning.
I've got mates down from Broome. I've got Digger and Suzanne staying with me.
Oh, these are some of your closest friends, aren't they?
They're my closest friends, yeah.
So there's some divilment on tonight, is there?
Could be dangerous territory.
Bit of a twinkle in your eye. I was thinking you're looking a bit sprightly this morning.
Yeah, I was very well behaved last night.
Well, we should feel very blessed for that.
Absolutely.
Cliff has called in from Maylands. Hello, Cliff.
Yes, good morning.
Morning, Cliff.
I had a gentleman earlier on asking about problems with grasshoppers, yeah, or with the locusts he was talking about.
Well, he said there were plagues of them, so, of course, right, they become okay. plague locusts.
I had a hydroponic farm in Margaret River a few years back, and every year we would get absolutely hammered with the annual plague of wingless grasshoppers.
Yep.
Needless to say, they decimated the lettuce. But in those days, we used to be able to get in touch with the Agriculture Department and get these amazing publications. And I looked at one and I found out a formula. Now, it was a simple thing. All I needed was a couple of bags of chicken pellets.
Yeah.
There's a product called Methocell Glue. That's M-E-T-H-O-Cell. Methocell Glue.
Yeah.
Now, what you do is you mix that up in a cement mixer with the chicken pellets, and then there's a particular poison at the time, but I can't remember what it was, but someone else in any of the shops you'd be able to say, it might have been Rogo or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you'd get your little garden sprayer and start the cement mixer up and stir the whole lot up. Now, what the methocell glue did was that, oh, no, it was a powdered poison it was. It used to stick the powder to the actual chicken pellets.
Oh, okay,
And you would put it in one of these push-along fertiliser spreaders, and within 24 hours we didn't have a single grasshopper. And what happens is they're cannibals, so once one of them dies, another one comes along and eats that one, that dies as well. So it was 100% effective, and it was recommended by the Agriculture Department at the time. So right, if the gentleman wants to try that, it's a okay, guaranteed solution.
Well, Cliff, that's really brutal. I'll have to ask old Dr. Bugalungs about that one. Now, the only thing I would say to people is that if it's killed the wingless grasshoppers, I don't know what the pesticide that was attached to that is, but it could be if it's going to kill that many wingless grasshoppers. I'm wondering about secondary poison for birds that eat the grasshoppers, if it actually kills the birds, and if that, when it gets wet, sinks into the soil, if it kills things like worms. And I'll find, but that's great, actually. I'll do some homework on that, Cliff. Well, actually, I'm going to get Dr. Bugalungs to do the homework on it and just find out what that is.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Cliff.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, someone wants to know, with the Iron Ladies, a.k.a. the Green Army, is that what we're going with? Green Army, Gorilla Army?
Yeah, Gorilla Army.
If they get arrested, are you going to bail them out?
Well, what would they be arrested for?
I don't know.
Well, they're not actually breaking any rule. Like, I have never, ever read any legislation that says
have you been going illegal, poking around for it?
It is illegal
to gorilla garden at
to
night.
To apply iron sulfate to a dying jarrah tree.
I suppose if someone was ignorant to what you were doing, though, they might think you want to kill it to get a better view or something like that.
They could, but then they'd have to prove that. And then if they did a soil sample and they did a test on the tree, on the cambium layer of the tree, they would find that indeed there is no herbicide that's been applied, only iron sulfate.
For those of you who want to join the Iron Ladies and the Iron Men and the Green Army,
you're
safe as houses. Safe as houses. Sabrina's looked into the litigation side of things. Safe as houses. All you need now is a satay stick and some green dye. And of course, your packet of iron sulfate.
A packet of iron sulfate. I think it's a gentle way to start a revolution.
They're the best revolutions, the gentle ones.
I reckon
and
so.
They're usually the most effective. Laurel has called in from Hall's Head. Hello, Laurel.
Oh, good morning, ladies.
Morning, Laurel.
I have a problem with morning glory.
Oh, good Lord.
A big backyard, and I vaguely recall you saying one morning that if we use a blackberry poison and kerosene, but I have forgotten the quantities.
Okay. So you only need, like, it with a whole... Now, you've got to cut the plant and apply it straight to the cut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you don't spray the plant with it. So you cut it down and then you have a paintbrush, get a Vegemite jar, put in 50 mils of blackberry and tree killer and a teaspoon of kerosene.
Okay.
And then you paint, get a little paintbrush, and you paint it as soon as you've cut it.
Okay, so that should knock it off.
Hopefully it will, because it's a mongrel thing to get rid of.
Oh, it is. Tell me about
it's
it. I've
shocking.
Been trying for several years, but I'll give that a go because I've got about a third of an acre in my backyard and it's
fine-sized garden, Laurel.
Tall trees. everything. And it's taken to the ground now.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of a thing. Well, good luck with that, Laurel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Laurel.
Pleasure.
Bye. So the Kwangan Foundation, it's one that people should definitely look up.
It is a fantastic Facebook page.
And it's Hans Lamber who's behind it. Mm. plants.wa.edu.au/alumni/Kwangan. And you can check out that video of the little bluebird. Sounds amazing.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And on my Facebook page, which is Hort with Heart, we'll have how to dye your satay sticks.
And she's putting it together, the Green Army, the Iron Men, the Iron Ladies, all getting behind Sabrina Han, and they're going to sort out this problem with the chert trees around Perth. So get into it, Maoris. It's coming up to 10 o'clock and Sports Talk.